Preliminary examinations ended Wednesday for six of the individuals charged by Dana Nessel's office with election-related felonies for signing documents attempting to turn over Michigan's electoral votes in 2020. A reporter who's been in the courtroom on this case and shedding light on it is Craig Mauger, state government and politics reporter for the Detroit News. Good morning, Craig.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me this morning. Friday.
Happy Friday to you. So six of the preliminary examinations concluded this week, and then there were six others previously that concluded. Now it's up to a judge to decide if it goes further?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So in all, Attorney General Nessel charged 16 Michigan Republicans, all 16 people whose names appeared on these false certificates that claimed Donald Trump won the 2020 election. There are 15 of them who are still facing charges. One of them got a cooperation deal. His name was James Renner. 12 have now gone through their preliminary exams. There are three others that still have to go at some point. It appears they're going to go through those exams at some point. And then in the future, there's going to be more court filings. And eventually, at some point, it could be months away still, this judge, Judge Kristen Simmons, will decide whether prosecutors presented enough evidence for these very high-profile cases, you know, the first electors who were charged after the 2020 election, whether those cases can go to criminal trial.
Craig, from the beginning, it seemed to me that there are two classes of defendants here. There are the party insiders, Michonne Maddock, who was a co-chair of the party, Kathy Burden, who's an insider. And then there were these lesser electors, maybe from rural areas, and many of them elderly, that may not have had the inside knowledge or the contact with Trump campaign officials to understand maybe what this was all about. Do you see it that way as well? And do you see these two different groups of defendants going different directions, perhaps, when it comes to whether or not they're bound over for trial?
I think you're getting at the most interesting question about all of this. These cases hinge on whether these defendants had an intent to defraud anyone. And it's very possible that some of these individuals knew a lot more about this plot than others did. I mean, a couple of these individuals were in their 80s, and it appears kind of simply showed up to follow the guidance that others were telling them. I mean, hey, you need to come here. You need to sign this. This is simply going to be a contingency. Did they all think it was going to be a contingency? I mean, contingent on something else happening? Or did some of them have that thought that people in the Trump campaign had that, hey, we're going to turn this document in regardless of whether there's a court decision that turns this election to us, and we're going to turn this into Congress, and we're going to hope that Congress picks this document over the legitimate document? You know, I think some of them knew more than others. I think that's a definitive statement here. But the Attorney General's office, you got to keep in mind, charged all of these individuals, essentially treating them the same, saying if your name appeared on this document, if you showed up for this meeting on December 14, 2020, that was the intent to defraud. You knew you weren't an elector, so showing up gives you the intent. The judge has poked some holes in that. Defense lawyers have poked holes in that. And it's going to be fascinating to see what Judge Simmons decides on that matter.
Well, it's never a good thing when the judge expresses the level of skepticism that she did about one of the chief investigators.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, those were some of the most dramatic moments. Those are the moments everyone kind of froze and looked around at each other in the courtroom over the last 2 weeks. The lead investigator, Howard Schock, testified over multiple days. I think it was as many, maybe potentially 4 days, he was on the stand at various points. And he gave answers that were not convincing to some of the defense lawyers' questions. If, for instance, defense lawyers would ask, hey, do you have any evidence that my client saw the first false certificate page? There were two pages here. There was a signature page, and then there was a page that had the false statements on it. And defense lawyers asked, multiple of them, do you have any evidence that our clients saw that false certificate page when they signed this document? And he said no to those questions, except saying, hey, one of the electors said he did see the page, so that's kind of circumstantial evidence that maybe the others did, even though another witness said that he was there and didn't see the page. So if the judge looked at this and says, hey, they don't even have direct evidence that these electors saw the false statements when they signed this, that's going to be tough. And she made comments saying that he had given inconsistent answers, that he wasn't you know, giving the same answers that the prosecutors themselves are trying to present. At one point, she, you know, a defense lawyer said, "What is the fraud here?" And he said that they were trying to cause a pause in the electoral process. The judge intervened and said, "What do you mean? How is it a crime for someone to cause a pause in the process?" Then the prosecutors tried to get him to alter the answer later when they were questioning him to say, hey, they were actually trying to overturn the election. So you have a lot of inconsistencies here. You have the judge criticizing the lead investigator. And if you're a prosecutor after hearing all this, you got to be at least somewhat worried.
This state is unique in that it charged the electors and not the Trump lawyers or the Trump campaign officials when there's evidence, you know, of intent with text messages that you've written about.
Yeah, I mean, that's the, you know, one of the key things here. Were the electors trying to fool the people of Michigan, or were there members of the Trump campaign that were trying to fool the electors and thus fool the people of Michigan into trying to change the vote here? There's a lot of evidence that points to this being a strategy of Trump's campaign lawyers. They came up with it. They disseminated it down to these electors. They got the electors to meet. They got them to sign this. I mean, there's a lot of text messages that the Attorney General's office has that points to that. They have not charged those Trump attorneys. There have been lots of questions in court about why didn't you charge these people? And essentially the AG's office has said it's still a pending investigation. Maybe they will get charged, maybe they won't, but we haven't charged them at this point. We don't think we've had enough evidence for some of them.
Has anybody on background said why they wouldn't go after, in this case, kind of the big kahuna, this Trump attorney that appeared to be, at least behind the scenes, the one who was telling Michon Maddock and Kathy Burden may have been orchestrating behind the scenes?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two main lawyers involved here. There's one, Sean Flynn. He was the guy in the room guiding this whole private meeting, kind of executing this on the ground. The other one is Ken Chesbrough, who's been charged in multiple other states. He has pled guilty in Georgia to a crime and has a cooperation deal. I would say that there are a few main challenges when it comes to trying to develop the state's case against those individuals. One, Ken Chesbrough has a cooperation deal in Georgia. He got some type of plea deal. And through a proffer agreement, he provided a lot of evidence to the AG's office. The AG's office made a choice to meet with him, to take that evidence with him through this deal. And thus, through the deal, they can't use it against him. So some of their best evidence about his criminal wrongdoing or potential criminal wrongdoing, they can't use against him. And a second thing here is a lot of these people have clammed up, aren't talking to them. They're lawyers, so there are questions of whether this is privileged information. Were they just providing legal advice to a client? There's a lot of hurdles here.
Well, we will read all about it. Craig Mauger, state government and politics reporter for the Detroit News. Thank you so much.
Hey, have a great day.
Coming up, more from Michigan Central and the history of the Ford Company and what's next.